Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the LeadX Leadership Show. I'm Kevin Cruz, and today we have another in our series I'm calling Hashtag Scaling Leadership. It's where we get advice on how to launch and build effective leadership development initiatives. And of course, we talk about great leadership advice too. Now, my guest today, she used to be the Senior Director of Leadership Management and Employee Development at Microsoft. She led their executive development efforts for over 11,000 managers. Now, today, she's an executive coach. She coaches CEOs around the globe. She's presented at TEDx and has keynoted all around the world. You can also find her articles on Forbes, HBR, Fast Company, and Inc. My guest today is Sabina Nawaz. Sabina, welcome to the LeadX Leadership Show.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's been delightful. We were talking, you know, pre-recording about writing and leadership ideas and coaching, and it feels like I've already known you for so long. But you're one of my new friends who I discovered while doing some research and just found like, wow, great ideas. And so I'm just thrilled to bring you to the LeadX audience and to start our friendship.
I'm so looking forward to getting right down to it and playing in the dirt with you, Kevin.
Love it. Love it. So I mentioned, you know, before the show, I read your short bio, but in your own words, you know, tell us about your background, you know, just your career arc and your interest in leadership development. Where did it come from?
My undergraduate and graduate degrees, Kevin, are in computer science, electronics, and computer systems engineering. So it made intuitive sense to go into leadership development as a professional. I actually started my career at Microsoft in software development, and over 9 years worked in all aspects of developing software products and managing organizations that did that in Windows, Internet Explorer, MSN, a number of startup projects that went nowhere, and so on. And then one day decided I was going to switch careers. And my first conscious exposure to leadership development was the investment that Microsoft as a company made in my own career by allowing me to switch completely from software development as a senior technical woman that nobody wants to lose, leadership development, where all I had to bring to the table was street smarts. I had no formal training or certification or education in it yet, and the company was willing to take a chance on me and put me in a senior role in charge of all of the leadership development, management development, employee development, and succession planning for the enterprise.
Wow.
So that's how it all started.
Well, and you just touched on, I mean, leadership development it covers a lot of ground, right? And so it's amazing that you kind of made that jump, and then I would imagine when you first started, it was a learning experience for you about some things, some domain expertise areas maybe you hadn't really encountered, at least not to that degree. But you also probably came at it with some fresh eyes and said, oh, well, have you guys thought about this? So, I mean, what was that like in the early days just being dropped into that team?
It was a mix of so many different things. It was exhilarating to be in charge of a team that was solely focused on leadership development, because I realized that, and I had gotten feedback from many people, wow, you're a great manager. Don't get me wrong. I also had feedback from people who thought I was a sucky manager. but overall, I had gotten a lot of positive feedback about being good with people, which is what had gotten me to explore this area. And in this area of leadership development, once it was officially my job, there were days, many days, where I thought, okay, after this meeting, I am going to be selling lattes. Because I have no idea what I'm doing. This is not my patch of training or work. And you're exactly right, Kevin. It called upon my business smarts. I knew how to run a business. I knew how to run a group. I also knew how to turn around situations. And so working with my small team and increasing productivity by 400% in that first year and getting things to our customers by inviting them to participate in creating leadership development. Because of my background, I started thinking about it more in a hybrid way. I learned a ton from my team, who were all leadership development experts. And of course, over the years I was there at Microsoft and since then, all the time, every year, I invest heavily in my own development to the point where now I have quite a bit of those certifications and things like that. However, it was the blend of me walking in the shoes of an actual manager running complex software projects for an enterprise and my team members who were deeply ingrained and trained in leadership development. And it was the blend of that that was really helpful. The other thing that was striking for me in those early years was I was thrown off the deep end of the pool. My first planning meetings, one of my first planning meetings was with the CEO of the company.
Oh, wow.
And figuring out what to do in that context, in that regard, to say about leadership development, it really drew upon a lot of my own management experience to start off with. And we worked on an annual succession planning process. And the first year, I remember Steve Ballmer telling me, Sabina, the glass is filling, but it's not half full.
That's a Ballmerism I haven't heard before. That's pretty good.
Which was a very polite and nice way of telling me, you better not screw it up next year. And so it taught me a lot of humility to say, this is different. Just because I'm smart doesn't mean I can solve every problem. I've got to get the training. I've got to understand. I've got to deeply listen. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did my second year, is deeply listened over a series of 10 different offsites with all of my HR colleagues. So I'm sure one of the questions you're going to ask is about what makes leadership programs successful.
Indeed.
I don't think it's rocket science. I mean, there are a lot of those standard blocks of training and teaching and content that are fantastic that we can put together, but they're not going to get a grip in an organization unless you really co-created it with your partners, your HR business partners, who are really going to help it get its legs, with the executives who are your customers. Mm. And we did that through a series of 10 offsites. That was one of the highlights of my career. I had initially told my boss, well, you know, I've benchmarked 30 different companies. I've had the meeting with Bill and Steve and the 20 top VPs to get their approval on this. I've had one offsite with our HR partners. I should be able to get something going in the next 2 months. I couldn't be more wrong. Mm. It was a matter of shelving all of that knowledge I'd gathered and zipping my lips, sitting on my hands, biting my tongue, literally at times, and really learning from the wisdom of my HR business partners to say, what is it like with you when you try to pitch these to your clients? What are the other things that are there in their day-to-day lives that I'm not aware of, where I'm thinking my program is just the solution to all of their problems? It really helped us create a program that lasted over time. Mm. Instead of reinventing it every single year, the Groundhog Day, if you've seen that movie of leadership development programs, we were able to create something that lasted over the course of years.
But can you recall a specific example of that, of where, again, you think, hey, we've got a great leadership program, I've talked to everybody, but then you go in, you just listen, you commit to really listening. What's something that you heard like, oh, I didn't know that, or I'm going to now make a change to the program because of that?
I'm not sure, Kevin, I can tell you an exact component. Mm-hmm. What was more important was how you frame things, how you prepare things.
I see.
And how you meet your audience where they are. For example, with brand new managers, new manager training, because our organization did the full spectrum from when you're thinking you want to become a manager to when you're one of the most senior executives in the organization. For a brand new manager, you could come in and have a series of talks and webinars and classes on lead with your values and understand your true north and set the right compass. And it was valuable. Those are obviously really important topics, but that probably wasn't the best entry point for them. Mm. Because they were in pain. When do we promote managers into managers in a corporation? When they're great individual contributors, usually.
Right, right.
they haven't trained to be managers, and suddenly they've got people crying in their rooms. They've got to deal with hiring and firing and setting goals that they can actually then hold people accountable to. And they're staying up, losing sleep at night, not knowing how to give corrective feedback to somebody who previously had been their peer just 2 weeks ago.
Right.
You've got to meet them and start with that pain and address those pain points first. And once you can release that pressure, now you can call them to the higher calling of why do you want to be a manager? And let's talk to you about the higher order bits, the purpose, the values, the solid core, and yourself. But we first got to give them what they're most in pain about. And the deeper listening helped us better understand where those pain points were at that point in the business. Because even though I had been a manager, and I still was, it had been many years since I had been that brand new manager.
Right, right.
So it was a great, powerful reminder there.
So I, you know, this is really interesting to me because so I was on the talking to a newish director of leadership development at a Silicon Valley company that everybody would know the name, and they're not really large, but he has maybe 300 managers, and he's building the new manager or the leadership development program from scratch.
Yes,
and he and I spoke about a lot of like leadership competencies, and he was talking to me about how their CEO, you know, goes around and talks about like the six things that he does as a leader. And they're fairly abstract and high level. And it sounds like if I had heard what you just said, you know, a week ago, I would have said to him, hey, you know what? You know, Sabina has some experience. She's kind of walked your path, and you might want to really focus on, for frontline first time managers, the blocking and tackling of the day-to-day, how to give feedback, how to set goals, how to hold people accountable. And it's not that the other stuff isn't important, but there's a time for it. Maybe that's the second level of the program. I mean, am I hearing you right?
Yes. And those things are super important. The leadership competencies, the values, the compass by which you manage people and do right by them. So you do want to frame things that way. It's a question of how much do you pivot towards that? How much airtime do you give what at what point in time?
Okay.
If you chart the life cycle of that manager and the training and development you're going to put them through, you always want that overarching envelope. Mm-hmm. But perhaps in that initial set of touch points, it's really about the pain that they're facing and the blocking and tackling. Once they've mastered that, now you're talking about some of those other things.
Right.
You definitely talk about those. It's just where your entry point is so that they are most engaged in listening to you. And they're not seeing this as a mandatory training that I have to attend. And meanwhile, I'm going to sit in the classroom and be on my phone the whole time.
Right, right, right. So let me ask now, I wasn't expecting to go in this direction. So you can cut me off if you need to. But you did mention Ballmer. And so, you know, I am passionate about the topic of employee engagement. And, you know, I don't consider leading to drive engagement up as a soft thing, but like a lot of people do. And so some people will roll their eyes like, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to say thank you and be nice and engage my team members. And then they'll point out, and it's usually the same people, well, what about Steve Jobs? What about Bill Gates? What about Ballmer? They were not warm and fuzzy people. And look what they did. They changed the world, built it. So all this soft stuff, it really doesn't matter. You've been front and center to this world and to some of these people. So how would you answer that when we have examples of super successful founders, CEOs, leaders? Is it that, hey, they had better people skills than the caricature that the rest of us have seen? Or it's like they would have achieved even more if they did have those people skills?
Kevin, I won't go into specific examples.
Of course.
However, I would say that the you're exactly right. You're getting to the point of it's a nuanced answer. It's less black and white than people see. Mm. Having worked with many executives, many, many CEOs that I coach one-on-one, a lot of times people will tend to make binary decisions about that CEO. They're harsh or they're not. They're a good person or they're not. They're smart or they're not. They're strategic or they're not, and so on. And the truth is, they only have small slivers of views into that person. Just like the CEO has small slivers of views into you if you're working in that organization. Right. And they make quick judgments as well, because as human beings, we make very, very quick judgments on very limited data points. And then when you're up above there, that turns into lore.
Right, right.
That one interaction, that one flashpoint turns into a story. So the truth is, first, that there are more dimensions to each human being than what we're just seeing. Mm-hmm. Second, we tend to elevate, amplify whatever stories we either experience or make up from that experience, mm-hmm. the more senior that person is. I mean, think about the stories we tell about famous people we may have encountered.
Right.
Oh, I saw Jack Black when I was hiking up a mountain and somebody asked for his autograph and then this happened. And therefore, I assumed he was this kind of human being. Is that really a fair characterization? Not necessarily. What is true is, what is the impact? What impact did you leave with? That whole quote from Maya Angelou about people remember how you made them feel.
Right.
So I think there's some of that. The other piece is, there are CEOs who might not be the most gifted from an emotional intelligence standpoint. Mm-hmm. How did they make it? One, there may not be that many of them, because the data on emotional intelligence actually shows us how much of a differentiator and game changer that is. But those who have made it, perhaps, who didn't have as much of the EQ side, is probably because they way overcompensated on the other skills that they had.
Right.
Because while EQ is vitally important, I wouldn't be doing the job that I do if I didn't totally believe in that. It's not the only thing. So there are many, many, many dimensions of success. And you can overshadow some of your weaknesses with some of your towering strengths.
Yeah, I really like that answer and the truthful nuance to the issue. It's not a simple issue. And compensating with your strengths made me remember, I don't know if you had a chance yet to work with Kim Scott, who wrote Radical Candor and built the first management training program at Apple. And she said, you know, some of these managers would say, you know, what about this giving feedback and leadership? You know, Steve Jobs never did that. And she would say, well, you'd better be as good as Steve Jobs then if you're going to ignore this stuff. And not too many people would make that claim, right? So there's different ways to lead.
Absolutely.
So Sabine, we talked about, you know, sort of your lessons, starting with those frontline first-time managers and how that advice might apply to my you know, friend who's just now getting going in the Valley. Let's go to that higher level, though. I mean, from your experience, from Microsoft to now, you know, when teaching more senior leaders, what is it that they need more of? What should we be thinking about if we're running leadership development programs for, you know, middle managers on up to VPs, you know, the high potentials that we want to have get to the very top?
Three words, Kevin: experience, connection, and continuity. It's got to be experiential. Again, the content, there is a lot of awesome content, some of which I create myself and I love. But the mistake I can make is fall too much in love with my content or with someone else's content and then think, of course, everybody wants to know everything there is about content X. And a colleague of mine and I were joking one day saying, we could stand up and be completely contentless and give them some experience where it's more about them and their right. experience and their reality, and they will think it was the best thing since sliced bread. So it almost, and I say this jokingly, but it almost doesn't matter what content you have there. Of course right. it does, but it's got to come bundled in an experience. And I've learned to whittle away content and find out what's the most important piece to leave there. I will botch up the pronunciation of his name, Saint-Exupéry, the guy who wrote The Little Prince. Mm. And he has a quote that I won't be able to quote exactly right, but something about perfection, meaning not when you have nothing more to add, but when you have nothing more to take away. Hmm. And I think with senior executive audiences, you've got to figure out everything that you can take away so you bring in sharp relief, in perfect frame, the thing that you want to land with them, and then make it about an experience. Turn up the heat high, but contain it in a way that they can tolerate it, and in a way that they build connections with each other.
Hmm.
Because they are so hungry for their connections. There was a university many years ago where I was invited for the first time to do a workshop for their department chairs across all their colleges. About 40 of these people showed up, many of them who were probably 40 years older than me in the room. And I can tell you, Kevin, I started with a small icebreaker and we ended up actually spending quite a bit of time in that discussion. And I started to worry, oh, I've got this many slides and this much content. And once I was able to let it go, realizing just how hungry they were to simply talk to each other and talk about the challenges they faced. And they had a lot more wisdom among themselves. They didn't need me. They just needed me to hold the space for them to have that conversation about their frustrations with tenured faculty or whatever else that they were going through. So that's the connection piece. And the things that people remember about leadership development programs, because I have many very long-term clients, and over the years I will run into them or they will come back to me for coaching, and I'll always ask them the question, what do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
It's rarely about the actual 5 steps of this or 10 steps of that. It's rarely about the content. It's about the experience, what they made their own because of the experience. It's about the connections they made, because now those people are actually doing transactional business with each other. And it's about the continuity. Programs for senior executives where, if you can get away with it, have an ongoing follow-up. One of the programs I deliver with a business partner of mine right now is called Ignite. And it's a very provocative, high-heat, really relevant program, because it starts with the nature of business today, which is so different from business before. It's about unprecedented challenges. They come in with their business challenges. Each person gets nearly an hour of dedicated time to get feedback on their business challenge from coaches and from their peers. They leave with their world really shaken apart. And if we just left that there, how much of that would stick, even though we think it's a fantastic program? When the pressures of their daily life keep getting added to their calendar. So what we do is follow on coaching calls for several months. And in those coaching calls, there's magic. They're in small groups. They're not one-on-one. We have seen transformational results. Somebody attributes not one, but 2 promotions over the course of 1 year to the program. And it's not because of the program. I think it was because of the continuity and the support and connection she got from her peers.
There is so much. My neurons are firing like crazy. And if we could go half a day on this. This is amazing. I know I'm going to be coming back to this over and over again. So one thing that just was so fascinating, you said if there wasn't the continuity, it's not going to stick. And absolutely. And I think for many of them, if there wasn't the continuity, you might have made them worse, because I saw this research where the meta-analysis of 600 360 survey processes, 1/3 the managers improved, 1/3 the managers got worse, and 1/3 there was no change. And the ones who got worse, a lot of it was they were given this startling feedback, right? It's this new self-awareness or where their gaps were. And that can shake their world. You can certainly get their attention. But then if you don't follow up with the action plan or a coach or something like that, all of a sudden they might just, you know, be struggling with that anxiety or leaping to the wrong conclusions or become defensive or whatever those things might be. I mean, this is one silly example. But if you're going through like such a shaking in that day, to not feel confident and safe that you'll be able to work through this with your new friends and coaches in the future, I mean, I could see that could cause some problems. And I also, just for our listeners, you made me remember there was a short time, most people don't know that I did this, I was the executive director of a nonprofit society. And so I would have a board of directors that would come together every 3 months. And me being, you know, the introvert, a task-driven guy, you know, achiever guy, we're trying to turn the organization around. I would pack that agenda. See, I was so stupid. I'm embarrassed now. I mean, I'm showing you these slides and I want you to read this report and everybody's got assignments. And what would happen was I would begrudgingly give everybody the 1 hour to have lunch. I would want it to be a working lunch, right? And then we would have lunch and they would start talking without my help about like, hey, I was just told I've got to launch this training program in Europe in 90 days. Does anybody have any good European vendors? Hey, we're rolling out the new CRM and blah, blah. They just started to talk about what their real world today challenges were. And immediately they got ideas, they got emotional support, some empathy, and a list of resources. In that hour, like I would be like, okay, everybody, 1 o'clock, time to get back to work. Like, okay, just a second, Kevin, this is valuable stuff. And what I learned over the years was I almost didn't care about the agenda anymore. It would be like, oh yeah, budget, you know, update on task force. And then let's have a whole lot of time to just connect. You know, I didn't have the words for it, you know, and it wasn't, I wasn't responsible for the experiential. They took it into their own control, but it was a magical experience. That board, I don't think they stayed together because of me or even their passion for this is really crazy, but it wasn't about the society. It became about their group. It was like a peer development and support group.
Yes. Yes. And that is the higher you go in an organization, the more vital that becomes. Because who are you going to turn to? Who are you going to talk to? That's one of the reasons people hire me as an executive coach, because I'm one of those safe people they can talk to where it doesn't become news headlines or impacts the stock price. And similarly, if you can create enough safety in a cohort that learns together, that is raw and vulnerable with each other, you've got to create safety in order to have heat. Mm-hmm. And you've got to have heat in order to have learning and development and transformation. To your point on the 360s, I personally would consider it irresponsible to do a 360 and then not do follow-up work with them. So I would not take that on.
Yeah. I think it's a form of consulting malpractice or human capital malpractice to give the patient the diagnosis and say, good luck with that, and off they go. Tell me more about, like, I really like you keep coming back to this word heat, turning up the heat. And what does that mean to you? Like, how do you turn up the heat in one of your coaching, group coaching programs, your training sessions? How do you turn that heat up?
Wow. How much time do we have?
you can give us one idea.
in group coaching or with individuals, I often tell people, the reason we're working together is not because you're not good. Coaching, fortunately, is no longer a profession where you're coming to it remedially or where you're on the verge of getting fired and the manager's trying to check a final checkbox or having you as a management doula.
Right.
Coaching is, you're fantastic. And yet there's something that's still stuck or something more that you want to achieve or do or leave behind. And it's unlocking that piece of the puzzle. So, of course, I'm going to come at things from a strengths-based perspective. I'm going to look at, are you taking your strengths to the absolute max, to the world class? Are we squeezing that juice as much as possible? And through that, I'm also going to reveal some blind spots. And I jokingly tell people, if you do not want to know whether you look fat in that dress, don't ask me because I will tell you. I'm like my husband. I have to go ask my 14-year-old if I want.
Your husband learned.
And so in terms of turning up heat in coaching calls, whether it's individual or group coaching calls, it's really trying to hold up the mirror and say, I'm hearing you tell this story about yourself. And guess what? We are rarely the villains in our own stories. So the story we tell about ourselves is, of course, noble. Because yes, we wake up with good intentions. Unless we have some serious problem, most of us don't wake up in the morning saying, I know I'm going to wake up and make life miserable for everyone around me. Yet when I'm hearing in the 360s, that people are throwing up before they have to come and have a meeting with you because they're so nervous. Or people are not really doing their best work. And of course, this is backed by neuroscience. When I hear that, let's talk about some other stories that might be told about you.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of your intent, but because of the impact.
Mm-hmm.
The effect of your affect creates a gap between the intent you have and the impact you have. So for in a coaching scenario, that's what I do. In a classroom scenario, it's actually turning the heat for senior audiences
mm-hmm.
is about saying, it's not about the person in the front of the room. Because you know what? I can give you, you can read my articles and get lots of lists and advice and three things and five secrets and 10 steps. And how many of those are you actually going to follow? You're not going to be sitting in a board meeting going, let me call Sabina and find out how I get out of this sticky situation. You've got to figure that out for yourself. So what are you going to do about this? And we have several techniques where we create space for them to understand what exercising leadership looks like, which is a verb that can be exercised by anybody at any place at any time, versus solely relying on authority, which is a noun and is positional. One of those exercises includes me framing that for them, that distinction, asking them what they need from me as an authority figure, but then inviting them to step into exercising leadership. And as part of that, I go silent on them for 30 minutes. You can just imagine how discombobulating, how many different things happen for people at that point. My intent there is to help them understand what happens when authority goes silent. How do you exercise leadership in those spaces? Because I say, metaphorically, has this ever happened to? Oh, yes, it happens all the time. So they leave that evening feeling quite disturbed and probably not liking me very much. Which, of course, is something I really like, and I have to set that aside in the service of their learning. And the next morning they come in and we do some sense making around that. Well, what happened? What were the first, second, and third moves when the person in the front of the room went quiet? What did you do to get your own answers, seek your own answers, versus continuing to want to seduce authority or put in a proxy authority or take out authority? So those are a couple of examples of turning up the heat.
That's incredible and profound, even not having experienced it, but just hearing about this idea of, and really, again, having them go through that experience of, wow, what happens when authority is removed? What happens and what should happen in those cases? Sabina, I wish we had more time. We have to wrap it up. But the big question I've got now isn't so much about leadership development, but certainly relying on your own experience as a leader. Imagine, you know, you're giving advice to the younger version of yourself who's stepping into the management role the very first time. I mean, what would be the one or two key things you wish someone had whispered in your ear?
As a new manager?
Yeah.
One would be to separate out yourself from your role. As a new manager, I took everything on personally and I thought I have to add value versus I have to add value in my role as manager. So understanding that when you have to do something tough as a manager, that might not land positively with everybody, that if you removed yourself and put in somebody else, the same thing would happen. That you're not a loser. That we all have to experiment our way into this. You're going to mess up at times. Take ownership for that mess up. I mess up all the time, even now. I cannot create heat without generating some dust, without learning myself. And unless we own that, we actually cannot push ourselves further.
I wish you had whispered that to me back my first time. I used to be a horrible boss, and
I've had those moments too.
To me, it was needing. I was a people pleaser, needing to be liked, and right. So the idea, if I had just understood to separate my own identity and person from the role of leader. Yes. It would have been a lot easier back in the day.
It's easier said than done, of course.
Easier said than done. Sabina, what's the best way for our listeners to follow along with your articles and work and learn more about your coaching services?
Oh, thank you for asking. They can email me, info@sabinanawaz.com. That's S-A-B-I-N-A-N-A-W-A-Z. They can, of course, follow me at Twitter, which is my full name, @SabinaNawaz. Connect with me on LinkedIn, etc.
Sounds great. Thank you again for your time today and sharing so much wisdom with our audience at LeadX.
Kevin, this was a blast. Thank you for inviting me. It got me to think more consciously about some things, and I hope it's helpful to some.
I'm sure it will be. Thank you.
Friends, if you like this episode of the LeadX Leadership Podcast, please take a minute, leave a rating on iTunes or Stitcher. Ratings are invaluable for attracting new listeners. And I like to convert those listeners into leaders because, you know, I'm on a mission to spark 100 million leaders in the next 10 years. And if you want to become the boss everyone fights to work for and nobody wants to leave, check out the LeadX platform with Coach Amanda at leadx.org. And if you have 10 or more managers who could use some binge-worthy training, send me an email at info@leadx.org, leadx.org. And we'll talk about getting you set up with a totally free pilot for those managers. See if they like it. If they don't, that's fine. We go away. Part as friends. But if they love it, you've just found yourself a new resource for them. Remember, leadership is influence. You're always leading. How are you going to lead today?